गणेशाय नमः। ॐ श्री सरस्वत्यै नमः। ॐ श्री गुरुदेवाय नमः। ॐ समस्तजनकल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरम्। Let's chant for a minute. जय गणेश जय गणेश पाहि माम। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष माम। जय गणेश जय गणेश पाहि माम। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष मा। जय गणेश जय गणेश पाहि माम। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष माम। जय गणेश जय गणेश पाहि माम। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष माम। जय गणेश जय गणेश पाहि माम। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष माम। जय गणेश जय गणेश पाहि माम। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष माम। जय गणेश जय गणेश पाहि माम। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष माम। जय गणेश जय गणेश पाहि माम। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष माम। जय गणेश जय गणेश पाहि माम। श्री गणेश श्री गणेश रक्ष माम। जय गणेश पाहि माम। श्री गणेश रक्ष माम। ओए गजानन स्वामी महाराज की जय। ओके, सो वी आर सीइंग दिस अद्वैत मकरंद एंड I don't know whose choice it was. Might be Raghuji or Gita ji. But whoever choice it was, they wanted you to know some heavy Vedanta. Because this Advaita Makaran is pure, see, Advaita. We'll come to that just now. But since it is about Vedanta and heavy Vedanta, let me tell you a little bit by way of introduction about this Vedanta and all. For those of you who, I know there may be people who have not really done, many may have done deep study in Vedanta, but there may be others who have not done also. So I have to tell a little bit about. Veda Anta refers to Upanishads. Vedanta is Veda Anta, the end of the Vedas. At the end of the Vedas, we have what are called as Upanishads. So while the vast bulk of the Vedas are based on duality, the Upanishads speak about oneness, meaning to say, it follows a very natural progression from the beginning of the Vedas till the end. In the beginning of the Vedas, it starts where we are. In all journeys, start where we are. If we have to go to Chicago from here, we can only start from here. You can't start to go to Chicago from there. You can start from where you are, yes. So we are born understanding the idea of difference. I am different from you. I am not connected to you. Even if I am my own parents, right? We are related, but different, isn't it? That is the feeling we are born into. We don't have any such feeling that we are one. Nobody has. So we are born feeling different from everything around, unconnected to anything around, unrelated to, no, I am not related to this microphone in any way. That is how we are all born. And then this sort of idea is taken up in the Vedas in the beginning. So what is there? There's I am here. And they discovered there is some place called Swarga. And there are all of these different types of materials and all of these mantras and different things. So if I use these mantras and these material and I put some self-effort, then I will go to Swarga. Because Swarga is there and I am here. And all that sort of thing. So there's the idea of difference. Not unconnectedness. But as the Vedas progress and knowledge increases and practice and tapas and upasana and different things which are there in the Vedas, at the end, the conclusion of the Vedas is, no, there is no duality. There is only oneness in the universe. Everything is one. That is seen very easily also. It will come up again later. But just to tell you now, the oneness is seen very easily from the standpoint of existence. This thing exists or not? It exists now. The space between here and here. The space exists or not? This thing exists. And so you go on endlessly. So everything exists. The extension of that statement is everything is existence. Because which part of it doesn't exist? Every part of it exists. So from the standpoint of existence, there's only one thing in the universe. I exist, you exist, the space exists, the stars, the moon, the planet, everything exists. And when we say they exist, we mean they are made up of existence. You know, in science, they say you have molecules, atoms, and then you go down smaller and smaller, particles, subatomic particles, and down at the bottom, lower and more they go, then it all becomes energy. The energy we call in Sanskrit as Shakti. Shakti is the power of the Absolute. the inherent possibilities, inherent power in the Absolute. But the Absolute is only existence. So science stops at energy. But we just go one step more, and that is existence. The building block of the universe is existence. So from that standpoint, there is only one thing in the universe. This is where the Vedas end. So it starts with a duality, but ends with a unity, a oneness. Now, if we have to go from here to Chicago, well, some part of the way we will have to walk to get to the car, and then from there we'll drive to the airport or something, and then from the airport we take a flight, then again into another car, then to wherever we are going, all that, right? So we take different means to get there. The journey requires different means and all. So here now, to get from this duality to this unity, a oneness, we have a whole program set out. You have to, you know, in steps like that, until we come to realize our oneness. Now some people ask, oh, why do I want to realize oneness? I'm fine. Right now I'm fine. I get up in the morning, I have chai and pakora. And I can only enjoy that pakora because I am different from the pakora. If I find out I am already one with that pakora, I'll not eat it. I'll just watch them. My dear pakora, we are one, you know. If I realize that, nobody will eat. Well, not like that. That will not happen, don't worry. You will enjoy your pakora just as well. The reason is, as long as there is a duality, there will be fear and sorrow. And this human being don't like. We don't like. Nobody is ever afraid of his hand, because there's a oneness with his hand. But he's always afraid of the other person's hand. As long as there's another person and their hand, we are afraid it may do anything, you know. But we are never afraid of our own hand, because there's a feeling of oneness with regard to this body. So, as long as there's a feeling of duality with this world, there will always be sorrow of some form. Even if you see the bhakti marg, in bhakti, you'll see wherever people feel that they are different from Bhagwan, among Bhagwan's bhaktas and all, you'll see them. And this bhakta will think, oh, Bhagwan is giving more attention to that bhakta. Or the guru. And I. So as long as I'm different from that one, Bhagwan is giving more attention. One fellow, he was on the television talking, I was listening. He was saying, in his church, there are 6,000 devotees, and they have a place reserved in heaven. His 6,000. And when they get to heaven, Jesus is already occupied the right side of God. So me and my 6,000 will occupy the left side. So I was just imagining, if you line up 6,000 people from here on the left side, it will be like 4 miles, you know. Now that man who is way down at the end, he'll not be able to see Bhagwan. Then he will start thinking, I belong to the same church, you know. That second and third person, they can see Bhagwan. Why I came at the end of the line? He'll start thinking or not. As long as we have any form of duality, all these type of things will crop up in all the time. Some problem, even where devotion is concerned. Well, I am a bhakta also, but I will start thinking, how that bhakta is more privileged than I am. So the idea is, where there is duality, no matter what we do, some form of sorrow will come. Only in an absolute unity, all sorrows vanish. Then, when you say this, some people say, so what is there? No problem. I have little sorrow. What is there? People want little sorrow also. Well, everybody talk about sorrow until it comes. When it comes, that time only little sorrow also nobody wants. I tell you this, the tip of your nail, you know, it just grows into the flesh. The little thing in the universe that doesn't count. But for you, that is the only thing that counts, isn't it? Little sorrow. Nobody wants. So, the program is given so that we'll move gradually from this duality which we all live in and experience and hold to be true. A program is given which if we follow, we'll come to discover the unity in the universe, the oneness in the universe. It's the universe. Isn't it? Unity and universe start with uni. One thing only is there. One eka rasa, eka madvitiyam, one undifferentiated reality. So, that program which is given varies from sampradaya to sampradaya, religion to religion, you know, all that is a variety is there. And the world, the nature of the world is variety only. You choose whichever you like. There is chai and there is coffee. And whatever you choose, chai or coffee, or some people mix both. Whichever you like. Different strokes for different folks. So now here in Vedanta, in our sampradaya and what we study, this is the program. The program is Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana. We listen, what is the Upanishad telling? What is this Upanishad telling? By that we come to know. Well, the Upanishad says, there is one Ekam Advitiyam Brahma, one non-dual Brahma. So by this Shravana, we come to know. But there is a difference between knowing and understanding. We can know something, but like for example, one teacher was asking that class, children in the class, if a man is running at 5 miles per hour, for 50 minutes, he's running at 5 miles per hour for 50 minutes. What is my age? That is the question for the class. He's running at 5 miles per hour for 50 minutes. What is my age? That boy said, 50 years. You're 50 years old. That teacher was stunned because he was really 50 years old. So the teacher asked, oh, how did you ever guess that? How did you figure, get that answer? He said, because at home, I have a brother. He's 25 years old and he's half as mad as you. In this world, I tell you, in mathematics also, see, I don't know if how good you were at mathematics in school, but sometimes you know the right answer, but you don't know how. When the teacher asks some question, we know the right answer, you know. But how to derive that? You have to show the teacher also, isn't it? How you derive that answer? I don't know, I just got it. But they want to see. The idea is we can know something, but not understand. We can do so many things like that. Like you know driving, but you don't understand anything about how that car works, and you don't even know where the engine is. You know this is a car, but how it works? And in some of those cars, you know, the little bug, long ago that bug, Volkswagen bug, they have that engine in the back. Huh? So when you open that front, there's nothing there. One lady was driving down the highway and speeding, then that bug stalled on the highway. So she came out now. And she opened that front. Oh my God, the engine fell out. Just thinking, what is this? Engine fell out? Another lady was passing at the same time with another bug. So she thought, oh, she's in the same position as I am. You know, better I stop and see. Let me stop and see if I can help her. So she pulled aside and also and stopped there. And she asked, what is the matter? She said, I don't know. I was just coming down very nicely. And suddenly the car stopped. Then when I opened that bonnet, that hood, I realized the engine fell out. That other lady said, ah, don't worry. Only this morning I opened my trunk. I have a spare one back there. You know? People know about driving and all of these things. Or how and why and wherefore and all that. It means we can know something but understand very less. Like just now I told, there's a oneness in the universe. The Upanishad tell. So by Shravanam, by listening, we understand that thing. But we know that thing. But by reflection called mananam, we really come to understand how, whence, why, wherefore, why it is said like that, how it is said like that. Reasoning and logic, see, by mananam. So knowledge and understanding. Oh, yes, now I understand how I am Brahman. I am one with the absolute. That is told first, then by mananam we come to understand. You come to understand that. But understanding also is not the end of the whole story, you know. We can also understand something, but not feel it. We have to feel our oneness with all things, just like how you feel love only for your people, but you don't feel love for other people. So feeling my oneness with all things in the universe, my intimate connection and relation to all things, is a whole different story also. So by Shravana, I come to know that there is one thing only in the universe. Then by Manana, I come to understand how and why and whence and wherefore, and it is said like that, by reflection and contemplation and all. Yukti, that is called logical reasoning and all in mananam. And then finally, by nididhyasanam or meditation, I come to feel my oneness with all things. So these are the three steps which are given in the shastras. Now, this Advaita Makaranda, which we are going to study now in these few days, it is Manana Pradhana Grantha. In the middle, Shravana, it is not about that. It is not about Nididhyasana also. It is about
manana.
It means it is through this text we go on reflecting, contemplating, reasoning, you know, deciphering, figuring it out, again and again going on, mulling over in our mind. How the Upanishad says, you know, I am Satchidananda, Brahman, one with that absolute reality, and there's only one Ekarasa. How, when, so wherefore, and all of that, and why? How can it be so? So it is called as, Advaita Makaranda is called as, Manana Pradhana Grantha, means its main objective is to mull things over. Go on reflecting on whatever is told, that I am that one reality. Okay, so that you got, this is where the text fits into this whole, because, you know, we have so many countless texts in Hinduism. If we have one billion Hindus in the world, we must have a separate text for everybody. So many texts, no end. So it fits into the program like this. So we are dealing with Upanishads. I mean, the method in the Upanishad is Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana. And from that now, this is a text on Manana. All right. Now that is first thing. Now second thing. This text is called as Advaita Makaranda. Makaranda means Pushpaha Rasaha. Apushpasya rasaha. It is, makaranda means nectar of flowers. Makaranda. That is the literal meaning of nectar. You know, flowers produce that nectar. So, in order to get that nectar, you know, that bee has to go inside, you know. Inside that flower. You see, when we look at some flower garden, and we're passing in our car, we see the neighbor's flower garden, we say, oh, how beautiful. And we drive along. But if you're strolling down the street, taking your dog for a walk or something, then when you pass by that flower garden, you can get that smell. See, the one who's passing in his car will only get the sight. He'll see. One who is walking down the street, he might be able to get some smell of that. But the bee is the best. That bee first sees that nice bright color from distance, then comes closer and that smell, and then goes inside that flower and drinks of that honey in that flower. So, this text is meant to make us into a bee so that we'll go in and get the nectar. Not just to look from the outside, you know. And some people do that also. They look at the cover and all. Nice cover. Yours is different, isn't it? In fact, I was doing this at one place, and one amma, when she saw, hey Swami, your book has a nice sun. She went and got a marker and drew that sun on her book. Nice painting of a sun. So, some people, you know, they send a nice cover, attractive and all, from distance only. They leave it there. Then there are others who open it and they read that. So there are some people only get a little vision from distance of the flower. Some open and they get a little smell also. But then there are those who do that manana and they go deep inside and then they get that nectar. So this makaranda word is meant to convey this. It is like nectar of the, then what? The Upanishads will be the flowers. Inside this Upanishad, there is nectar. We're going to reflect on that nectar, go deep into it. Now, Advaita. Advaita word means non-dual. Or no two. There is no two. There is only one. That is the meaning. No two-ness. Only oneness. Advaita. So it is the nectar of oneness. Of course, of the Upanishads. Then, it is written somewhere way back in the 11th century, it might be. In the 11th century, there was a great poet in Orissa by the name of Lakshmidhara. Lakshmidhara Kavi, he wrote a couple other books also. One is a commentary on Bhagavatam, and another is Bhagavan Nama Kaumudi, means he wrote a commentary on names of Bhagavan. So he has written a couple of other texts also. And thanks to our Pujya Guruji, this text came to light, otherwise nobody was studying it or anything. Guruji's commentary in English is perhaps one of the only existing commentary that you will find. But just after Lakshmidhara Kavi, there was another great sage whose name was Swayam Prakasha Yati. He was a Yati. Yati mean? Yati doesn't mean Bigfoot. Yati means Parivrajaka Swamiji, who just goes everywhere. And Yati literally means one who strives very hard. So there's Swayam Prakasha Yati. He wrote a commentary in Sanskrit. He wrote a commentary in Sanskrit on this Advaita Makaranda. And if you don't know Sanskrit, then no problem. Guruji's commentary is following that Sanskrit commentary very close. In fact, Guruji's English commentary here is actually, you can say, more or less a translation of that Sanskrit commentary by Swayam Prakasha Yati. So if you want to study that Sanskrit commentary, just read Guruji's translation. So that's Lakshmidhara Kavi, who wrote it, was a very, very great bhakta of Bhagavan. And see, he also proves that there is absolutely no, because he's writing on Bhagavan Nama, the names of Bhagavan, and he's writing a commentary on Bhagavatam, those two other works. So there is no contradiction between bhakti and Vedanta, Advaita Vedanta, because it's pure Advaita. That's why Bhagavan Shankaracharya also, after all of these commentaries and all of these Upanishads and all, still so many stutis and stotrams and all the devis and devatas, there is absolutely no contradiction between, for one who understands. For one who doesn't understand, there seems to be some contradiction. But for one who understands, there is no contradiction at all. That will also come out, become more and more clear. So he has written, those are now pure Advaita Vedanta he has written. So that indicates no contradiction between the two. Now, in the beginning, we'll see how he starts very nicely. I'll chant, we'll have to finish. Now we have 6 classes, isn't it? And we have 28 verses. So roughly 5 verses per class. We can manage. No problem. We'll have to go a little bit faster, but we'll manage that. Now I will chant that those verses, and you can just repeat, and then we'll see those meanings.
Kataksha kirana chanta
naman mohabdhaye namaha anantananda krishnaya jagan mangalamurtaye. Okay, so he says namaha. This is how you'll have to do the anvaya, like that. Namaha, salutations to who? Anantananda Krishna. So Anantananda Krishnaya, salutations to that Lord Krishna who is infinite. Now several meanings will be there now. That infinite Lord Krishna, who is of the nature of infinite bliss. So salutations to that Krishna. But this Lakshmidhara Kavi also had a guru whose name was Anantananda Swamiji. So he's playing on the words. And he's a typical style of Vedantic writers. They will salute the Lord. At the same time, they will salute their guru. Tulsidasji also does in Ramayana. Nararupa Hari. He salutes Hari, Bhagavan Ram, who is incarnation of Hari, who's taken Nararup, human form, like that he says there. Same sort of thing here. And that time, oh, his teacher's name is also Narahari Das. So they are very good at this type of thing, put together. So here he says, Anantananda Krishna. So he salutes Krishna, and at the same time he salutes his own guru. And then what it tells, it means also that truly such great bhaktas, they realize Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Devo, Maheshwara, Guru Sakshat Parabrahma. The guru is Brahma himself. You see, guru is his own Ishta Devata. So usually in these type of texts, there's always a salutations to the guru and to Bhagwan. It is called as Mangalacharan. Mangalacharan. Mangalacharan means, acharan means setting out, you know. Setting out. When you are setting out, beginning. And in the beginning, there's something, some mangala means auspicious thought should be there in our mind. Whatever we are doing in the world should have some good intention. That is the idea. In other words, if there's anything which comes in our mind with bad intention, we should stop there and then. And anytime we're going to start anything, we should also always make some good sankalpa. Okay, I'm going to do this for such and such benefit for the world. And then we call it mangal. Auspicious. Mangalacharan, I can go on talking only on that topic only. So good it is. Mangalacharan. But anyway, all the texts always start with some Mangalacharan like this. And he says, I salute that Bhagwan who is of the nature of infinite bliss, Ananta Ananda. And who, now the rest of the verse is just to describe that Lord or to describe that Guru in whom he is seeing oneness. The tradition is like that. One Lord is that same Guru. Lord has come as that Guru only. The tradition in Bhakti Marg takes it even further than that, you know. Bhakti, Guru is glorified so tremendously everywhere. Tulsidasji said that the Guru is so important that even Bhagwan needs a guru also when he comes. Guru binu bhavanidhi tarai na koi. Nobody crosses over the sansar without that guru. जो भी रंजी शंकर सम हो इवन इफ दैट पर्सन बी द इक्वल ऑफ बिरंची मीन्स ब्रह्मा जी और शंकर भगवान एवरी शंकराचार्य हर गुरु इन कानेशन लॉर्ड शिवा ओनली ना राम हर गुरु कृष्ण हर गुरु लॉर्ड ऑल्सो टेक्स अवतार ही ऑल्सो नीड गुरु कविता गुरु गोविंद दोनों खड़े इफ गुरु एंड गोविंद आर स्टैंडिंग टुगेदर काको लागू पाए वी हुज फीट यू विल टच फर्स्ट फर्स्ट वी टच दी गुरुज फीट बलिहारी गुरु आप में the guru is the one who sacrifices and who makes us you know Ravan took the form of Ram and came in front of Sita ji so it is the guru who will tell that is Ram or Ravan so therefore we say the guru is to be saluted first therefore he salutes ananta ananda and then krishna you see Anantananda, then Krishna, he put. This is how important this guru tradition is. And people say we have a guru shishya parampara. You know? We have also guru parampara. Maybe that guru will make that shishya into another guru. Yeah? So, salutations to that guru. Then what does this guru do? He says, Kataksha kirana chanta naman mohabde. That guru who by his side glance, you know, kataksha, the rays of his side glance, just by glancing on the side. Kataksha drishti it is called. These two types of drishtis are given in shastras, two very nicely. One is kataksha drishti. And one is called a simha avalokayan drishti. Means, Simhavaloka, have you seen in these documentary movies, documentary films with tigers and lions? The lion will be coming, majestic lion with big mane and all like that. Na? And then suddenly the lion will stop and he'll look back. Have you seen? Simhavalokayan. Simha means lion, looking back. But drishti of guru is kataksha. He looks on the side. So it's from the side glance, from the corner of his eyes, the rays that come out. What it does? Achanta naman mohabdi. Mohabdi. In fourth case. So, it means who dries up the ocean of samsara just by the rays of his side. Glance like that. That is the power of Guru. So of course now that has itself also many things attached to it. I mean just by one or two words properly acquired from the Guru, I can be transported out of the samsara. Just by one or two words. Or just by his grace, I can be removed from samsara. I mean, samsara will be taken away from me. Just by his grace only. So, salutations to that guru who is Jagan Mangala Murti. In again, fourth case. It means he is of the nature of auspiciousness itself. Jagan Mangala Murti is his very form is auspiciousness. So to remember the guru, to recollect in our mind, to bring a form of the guru in our mind, is to bring up an avalanche of grace and auspiciousness to our own mind. That is the idea. So salutations to that guru. Sometimes some of the texts will not have any Mangalacharan like this because the Ishtadevata is spoken about here, Krishna and also the Guru. Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharishi, for instance, when he starts, Karturajnaya Prapyate Phalam Karmakim Param Karmatajjaram. No mention of any such name of Guru or form of Bhagwan and all that. It is called as Vastu Nirdeshaha Mangalacharan. Means that type of Mangalacharan is speaking directly about the reality itself. Kartu, that means Karta, means Ishvara. So it goes directly to Ishvara, there is no form. Here is Krishna's form. So here is Ishtadevata, Mangalacharan. So we start off all things like that with some auspicious thought for grace and blessings. And oh, you should see Tulsidas ji, Bapre. In Ramayana, he goes on for pages of Mangalacharan. He salutes this one and that one. And all. He salutes all wicked people too. Because if that person did not do any wickedness and I did not suffer, I would not have remembered Bhagwan. So thank God to all these wicked people. They made me remember the Lord. Yeah. Salutation, salutation, salutation. So many in the beginning there. So now after this Mangalacharan and the salutations and all, now he starts. Now I told you, Raghuji wanted you to learn pure Vedanta. So now see this, huh? You have to make your mind strong now for this Vedanta. This is like, you know, you have to learn to drink molten steel. A lot of thinking will be there. Now see number two. Ahamasmi sada bhami. Kadachin na amapriyaha. Brahmevahamata siddham. Sachidananda lakshanam. Aham eva. Now, Brahma aham eva. I am nothing but Brahman. Who is Sachit Ananda. See, this is the statement. Aham Brahmasmi means the statement of the Upanishads, isn't it? Upanishad statement is Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman. Oh. Now, that is what we hear. I heard like this. Human being like to say, I heard such and such. I heard like this. It is Shushruma Purvesham. The Upanishad said. This is we have heard from the ancestors and teachers. Oh, so you hear it also. Aham Brahma. Asmi. I am Brahman. But now, in the first line, he tells, oh, how I can be this Brahman? And now we have to reflect. I told you, mananam, na? You have to reflect. How I can be this Brahman? He says, aham asmi. First thing. That is, sat. Sada bhami. I always shine. That is, chit. And, kadachin na aham apriyaha. And never am I, or never do I not like myself. And that is how I am Satchitananda. What? That didn't tell anything. I always shine, and never do I not like myself. And that is proof that I am Satchitananda. That seems to mean nothing. Therefore, Swayam Prakashayati has given commentary very nicely. So now let us reflect on all of that little bit, right? One fellow went to a professor and he said, sir, how do I know that I exist? That professor said, who may I ask is asking? Meaning to say, our existence. Because remember what the Upanishad is saying, I am Sat, I am Chit, I am
Ananda.
Means I exist. Sat means existence. Chit means consciousness. And Ananda means bliss. The Upanishad, I am Satchidananda.
So then how do we know that really I am Sat? I am existence. Well, we don't require any external source to know that.
Even if, please remember this, see this thing. Even if I ask, how do I know that I exist? Just analyze this statement a little bit. How do I know that I exist? I have to exist even for the question to come, isn't it? If I don't exist, to whom the question is coming? There has to be a pre-existing being to whom the question is arising, isn't it? Or from whom the question is arising. So my prior existence is necessary for the emerging of the question itself. If I don't exist, so the question will arise where? In nobody. How a question will arise in nobody? And nothing. Nothing will arise. From nothing comes nothing. So if the question is arising, how do I know that I exist? That question itself proves my prior existence. The French philosopher René Descartes used to say this: I think, therefore I exist. If thinking is going on, that means I exist. I saw a nice cartoon with two slides, you know. One fellow is reading this sign. In the first slide, in the first panel, he's reading the sign on a board. I think, therefore I exist. The next panel, then nothing. That means to say, he doesn't think. So, next panel, blank. He's not there anymore. So, thinking proves existence. Or anything which comes up in the mind proves existence. That I am there. So, aham asmi. Aham, that sada, is called in Sanskrit as kagakshi. Kagakshi means kagakshi golaka. Nyaya, I'll tell you what it means. Have you seen a rooster that runs about in people's yard and all that? Sometimes when they watch, they bend their head like that. They have to angle their head in such a way so that their eyes can see, because their eyes on side. One eye on this side and one eye on that side. So one person was trying to determine if really that rooster has two eyes. Because when he stands on this side, he's seeing this eye. Then he goes around that rooster and he comes on this side and he's seeing, and he's thinking, no, I wonder if it is the same eye that has moved from that side and gone this side. And there's no way for him to conclude, to figure out. Because one minute he's standing on this side, next minute he's standing on that side. So maybe it is the same eye that moved. So he came up with this thing. It is one eye. So when you're on this side, the rooster moves that eye and he's seeing you. And when you come on this side, the rooster moves his eye and it comes on. So one eye functioning based on that. In Sanskrit grammar and all, they use that term. Sada. Now sada means aham asmi sada. I'm always existing. And sada bhami, I'm always shining. The sada is used both sides like that. Very common form of composition in Sanskrit. So now, aham asmi, sada asmi, I am always there.
it will come up again just now. I'm always there. It means to say, everything is coming and going, but I am there. So one thought comes and goes, one person comes and goes, this, you know, object comes and goes, everything. But then there's somebody who is knowing that, who is there all the time, that not coming or going. Not only that I am there all the time, but I also know that I am there. So that satabhami means I am of the nature of consciousness. When it says satabhami means I always know. So now just think. Not only do I exist, but I know that I exist. Please pay attention to that. Eh? I exist and I know that I exist also. Now suppose I existed and I never knew. Suppose I existed and I never knew. Now you think. Would I be able to say that I exist? No. If I exist and I never knew, that is tantamount to non-existence. Second thing, you go the other way now. Suppose I know that I don't exist. That statement is tenable? That statement is not tenable. See, there are two words here now. One is existence and one is knowledge. Two words. So the first word is, I exist, but I don't know. That is tantamount to non-existence. Second one, now, I know, but I don't exist. That is untenable. Because if I know, that means I have to exist first, then to know, isn't it? So the two things are not possible. So in other words, existence and knowledge is one and same. I exist and I know also that I exist. And when? Sada. Sada means? Always. Things may come and go, but I am always there. See, and in that same vein, bodies come. It's just like thoughts come and go, people come and go. This, you know, all things come and go, memories come and go, experiences come and go. And I am always there. In the same way, bodies come and go, brahmandas come and go, lokas come and go. No, like that. All the time, coming and going, but I am always there. Means I exist and I know that I exist always. This is first point. Now second, the third point is now, first and second. Third, kadachin na aham apriyaha. There is no time when I don't like myself. These three things, ahamasmi is sat, sadabhami is chit, consciousness, awareness, knowledge. And the last one, kadachin na aham apriyaha, is ananda. And we'll see how now. There is no time where I don't love myself. There are some people who say, no, I hate myself. Have you heard people saying, you know, I hate myself. That is proof that he loves himself, actually. You just think about it. There is something about himself which he doesn't like. There's something about himself which he doesn't like. And that thing is preventing him from his own self. Yeah. And because that is preventing him, he comes to the conclusion, I don't like myself. Really, really, he loves himself and he doesn't like that thing. And he's complaining about that thing. At that moment, when he says, I don't like myself, that thing is preventing him from his own self. And because of that, he's saying, I don't like myself. Really speaking, the type of thinking you have to do here is like this. On Sesame Street, there's Oscar the Grouch. Have you seen? There's a fellow named Oscar the Grouch. He lives in a garbage can in Sesame Street. So, Oscar is a grouch who loves all things to go wrong. Right? So, if there's a picnic and it rains, it spoils the whole picnic. Right? So, Oscar is happy. If there's a birthday party and the cake didn't show up, he is happy. Anything that goes wrong in Sesame Street, he's happy. So, Oscar the Grouch likes thing to go wrong, or he likes happiness? He likes happiness. Things to go wrong is only a means to his happiness. Every creature like this only likes happiness. Some people may get that happiness in a sadistic way, like Oscar the Grouch. But in the final analysis, all he likes is happiness. This is the first point. We all like only happiness. Second point now, see, follow that same thought. We like happiness sometimes, half of the times, quarter of the times, or 100% of the times. 100%. We like happiness. So that means happiness is the thing which is most like, correct or not? That logic takes us to that end. Happiness is the thing which is most liked. Oh, so there is one point on this side. Let me just keep this point here. Happiness is the thing which is most liked. Oh, now on this side, another point. In this world, which is the thing which we most like? Which is the person who we most like? Your neighbor, your friend, your husband, your wife, or yourself? Oh, if you do little analysis, you will see. We love ourselves the most. You may tell whatever you want, but I will not believe you. I believe the rishis. You may tell, you know, I love my wife more than my life. You tell. I don't believe you. I believe the rishis. When they tell me, believe the Upanishad, it says that we love ourselves the most. And this, if you analyze well, sincerely, you will see that it's 100% true. Whatever we do. See, even the most benevolent act, you just tell any act, and I will show how really you are doing that only for your. See, then mother, newborn baby, 2 days old, that mother realizes that the baby's bed has become wet. Mother takes the baby from there, puts on the dried bed, and she herself sleeps on the wet bed. And we say, what an act of benevolence, you know. She thinks about the welfare of the baby. She thinks about the welfare of that baby. So she loves the baby more than her own self. No. You see, the thinking is just stopped short. If it were the neighbor's baby, the act will be different. Especially if it is a baby of some other race. When African American woman, she was in the supermarket taking that baby, you know. And next to her, there was a Chinese woman with another baby. And when she looked up like this on the shelf, she picked up something and put in her cart and all, she came away with the wrong stroller. Now that baby's in front, you can't see. So she reached home with a Chinese baby. Then that husband goes, what is this? You brought home the Wong baby. Wong.
But anyway, the mother, if it is her own baby, she responds in this way. If it is another baby, the response will be different. So now see, the idea of my baby has come into that or not? The idea of my baby. So who is important then? Not baby. If baby was important, any baby would have done the job. But my is there, isn't it? So that, in other words, in the final analysis, the only person that matters in this world is for all of us. We like everything in this world because of our self only. And I like myself the most. So I told you, this is on my side. I like myself the most. And here we told, we like happiness the most. So isn't it somehow, subconsciously, since we love ourselves the most and we love happiness the most, my nature may be happiness only, isn't it? I am the source of, and this is what the Shastra is telling. I am the source of all happiness. Happiness is not contained in anything in the world. I am the source of happiness. And what a peculiar this human being, you know. Look here. I love this watch. Really, when I saw it, I told that one, nice. I love this watch. Then another person who sees this watch, he will say, what an ugly watch. I have never seen anything so ugly in my whole life. So the watch will give me happiness and it will give that other fellow misery, isn't it? I will not be seen dead with a watch like that, he'll say. Right? Now, really speaking, if it gives me happiness and gives him sorrow, where do the happiness and sorrow arrive from? Not the watch. If it were from the watch, both of us would have felt the same thing. It is superimposed by us. So I'm telling you a peculiar thing about human being now. What is that? We superimpose the happiness on the thing, and then we ourselves run after that thing. What a peculiar thing. That thing doesn't possess any happiness. Happiness doesn't inhere in objects of the world. Happiness is our nature. Joy is our nature. We superimpose it on a second object and then we run after that object. Wonderful state of human existence, isn't it? And the person A will superimpose happiness on this object and person B on that object, and we're all running after some superimpose. That's like somebody trying to catch the shadow. When you were children, you tried to catch your shadow. How you'll catch? That is why nobody can be happy in this world. I cast the shadow there, and then I run to hold my head. But it eludes me. Because when I leap forward, the shadow also leaps forward, isn't it? So I superimpose the happiness. And that's why, see, when we get the thing, we realize, people keep saying, you know, in this stage of my life, I was dying from preschool, I was dying to go to primary school. From primary school, I was dying to go to high school. From high school, I was dying to go to university. From university, I was dying to graduate. Like that. Because the happiness he's expecting there doesn't materialize. When I graduated, I was dying to get a job. When I got a job, I was dying to get married. When I got married, I was dying to have children. When I got children, I was dying for the children to grow up and get married and get out from the house. When they got married and got out from the house, I'm dying to retire. When I retired, I realized I was dying and I never lived. Because whole life you were dying. I spent my life dying. Why? Because I will perceive the happiness in the next. I superimpose a happiness in the next stage. And when I get to that stage, I realize, where is the happiness?
like shadow.
Like this, we ourselves are the nature of happiness. That's why I say, aham kadachin na apriha, I never hate myself because my nature is happiness.
Nobody ever hates themselves. If he hates himself, he's just making a superficial statement without really thinking that statement proves that he loves himself.
There's something in his personality, not in the self, something in the personality to which he has identified, or with which he has identified. And that thing he hates.
This is also connected to people committing suicide.
The person commits suicide because he loves himself too much, and there's something in his life which is bringing so much of misery.
You see?
If when he's going to commit suicide, you tell, okay, take care, come.
You want to marry that such and such girl? Oh, take care, marry.
He'll commit suicide.
No.
There was that thing which he was thinking will give him happiness, and he couldn't get it. So it just, his happiness was misplaced. He had superimposed the happiness on something else. So he says, I am of the nature of bliss, ananda, and therefore I never hate myself, I love myself. Kadachin na apriha, I never find myself to be apriha, unlovable. Because of these two things, I love happiness the most and I love myself the most. An equation comes. That means I have to be of the nature of happiness. So I am Sat because I always am there, and I know that I am always there. Because existing and not knowing that I am existing, that doesn't make any sense. So, like this. Now see, why this is all mananam? Again and again, we have to go on reflecting on this. And that, in the end, this type of mananam, which begins in this verse and goes all the way to the end of the text, that is supposed to rivet in my mind that my nature is Sat-Chit Anand. Then only I can meditate on that firm conclusion. Then only I can do Nididhyasana. So this text is of this nature. It goes on this type of reflection. All right. Okay. So we'll stop here. And well, my watch is saying 8:15, but that is saying 8:18 or something. I don't know which is correct. 15. Mine is correct. That's a little fast. All right. So now next class will be at 10 o'clock. All right. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha.